Hey everybody, it's Paul Scheer from How Did This Get Made? I wanted to let you know that we have a brand new website. It's hdtgminfo.com. You can find out everything that you need to know about How Did This Get Made on that site, where we're doing live shows, where to buy tickets, what the movies are. Everything and anything is there. And I want to let you know that we have shows coming up in New York and Denver and in some other places that we can't quite announce yet. So bookmark hdtgminfo.com.
The following episode of How Did This Get Made is sponsored by LegalZoom. They're helping keep the show free. If you go to LegalZoom.com and enter the code EARWOLF, you'll get a discount and 100% of what you spend there comes directly back to the show. LegalZoom is the best place to help with your legal needs. They're not a law firm, but they provide self-help services at your direction. For more information on how to support this show and the rest of the EARWOLF podcast network, go to EARWOLF.com/insider.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Did you know you wonder how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth. Welcome to How Did This Get Made? This is the podcast where we try to make sense of the movies that make no sense. I'm Paul Scheer. You might know me as Andre from the TV show The League, or from my star turn as Rango, the lovable old rest lizard in Rango. I am joined by Jason Mantzoukas, who you might recognize as Rafi from The League. What's going on, Jason?
How are you, Paul?
Very good. And, of course, June Diane Raphael, who you've seen on Party Down and Flight of the Conchords. June.
Hi, Paul.
This movie that we have today.
I'm fucking furious.
Yes. Well, I mean, we love...
Jason's go-to emotion is anger. Always.
No, this
movie enraged me.
It's warranted. I mean, we love crappy movies, and I don't think there is one crappier than Battlefield Earth. It's like if Star Wars farted on the Planet of the Apes, it would become this film. Here's the basic premise, and I had a hard time distilling it.
Don't bother. Fuck this movie.
The movie takes place in the year 3000. Earth has been conquered by aliens.
Wait, is that true? It takes place in the year 3000?
Yes.
Oh, come on.
The subtitle of the movie is...
No, I'm even angrier that those fighter planes fly?
Yes.
Oh, fuck you, movie.
Well, we won't get too far. Basically, aliens have been taken over by, or aliens from the planet Cyclos have taken over the remaining humans left on Earth. One of the villagers who is still alive, living far away, is captured after being caught in an abandoned mall and brought to the Human Processing Center in Denver, where he meets Turo.
When those fucking Chirons come up and it's like, Human Processing Center, and then it's Planet Cyclo. I was
so
like,
bad.
Really? I need to know the...
But you know what? As I'm even explaining it, it's a terrible idea. So basically, a caveman is captured by an alien. The alien wants this caveman to mine gold for him so he can get back to his home planet. But guess what? It messes up for him. They steal gold from Fort Knox, steal nuclear weapons and Harrier jets, and blow up the aliens' mining operation. That's the basic premise.
Well, why did the aliens need the gold?
Does gold hold value throughout the universe?
Well, let's find out these
the
questions.
The universal currency is based on gold.
It is not! No way!
Every planet's currency is based on gold.
All right, let's just hear a clip from the movie. This is just give you an idea of the movie. This is when Turl finds out he has to stay on planet Earth a little bit longer.
I don't mean to second guess the Home Office, but surely I could be of better service to the corporation.
Home Office is well aware of your academic achievements and obvious talents. That's why we've decided not to keep you here for another 5 cycles.
It's a joke.
Oh, thank you, sir. I don't know if I could have kept my sanity to be here another 5 cycles.
We've decided to keep you here for another 50 cycles. With endless options for renew. With endless options for renew. With endless options for renew.
That is the movie. Now, here to help us make sense of this movie is our friend. You've heard him here on Earwolf on a show called Mike Detective. You've seen him on Human Giant and on Children's Hospital. Please welcome Rob Hubel.
Thank you. I'm leaving.
No.
Rob,
I'm leaving. No, this
down.
Is why I'm leaving, because I agree with Jason. I agreed to do this podcast before I watched this movie, and about 3 minutes into it, I wanted not only that 3 minutes back, I wanted the future time I was going to give up back. It's an hour and 57 minutes, and there's nothing you can do, Scheer, to get me back that time.
Well, I'll tell you this much. It's an hour and 57 minutes, but if the movie didn't have the slow-mo, it would probably be about 45. There's more slow-mo in this movie.
Why would you couldn't make the action scenes work? So they had, the only way to make the action scenes look good was to do them in slow-mo.
They look terrible. Like, anything that's supposed to be action-y, they cut to slow-mo. It's like, fuck this.
If you like slow-motion horse scenes, then you'll like this movie. I've seen more slow-motion horses.
But that horse's journey was one of the most developed.
I'll go out on a limb and say best acting in the movie done by that horse.
When he came running back into town.
Into camp?
That was good.
That was like, I was like, oh no, he did the right. How did he find his way back?
Well, here's what I couldn't get over watching the movie. I couldn't feel worse for the costume people and the art director and because there's so much work that went into actually building what that world. I mean, a lot of it is crappy CGI, but like all the costumes and like just those sets.
Hair and makeup, it's 4 hours each morning.
Can you imagine?
Absolutely.
Can you imagine getting that fucking makeup every day?
Every day to deliver lines that make no sense.
Listen here, rat brain. Your skull bone is definitely a skull bone.
Can we talk for 1 second about John Travolta's accent?
What?
Where would you place it?
We could talk for 1 hour about John Travolta's accent.
It changes from scene to scene. Sometimes it's colonial British or something like that. And then other times it's, there's 4 or 5 distinct different voices.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This, I wrote, like, I was writing notes as I was watching it. And, like, the first beat happened. And then in the course of the next scene, I just started writing, this movie instantly makes no sense. I have no idea what any of these people are talking about. And then I just wrote, why did these actors take this job?
Forrest Whitaker is the only person who's come out and said, I made a huge mistake.
Is he really?
There's a long sequence where they let the man animals, which, again, that's a fucking dumb name. That's the other problem I have.
That's
is like
what they
the,
were,
but
Mom.
The, but the language is so unimaginative.
It's lazy.
They say words like vaporize, like I'm going to vaporize you. That's what a little kid would say.
Although there are some phrases which was interesting to see, like, okay, in 3000, these are the phrases that stood the test of time. Piece of cake was in there.
Piece of
grass
cake
is always greener.
Grass is always greener.
And let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, like, those phrases held up.
Leverage. Leverage is used so many times in this movie.
They have that
I hope
whole,
you got some leverage.
They have that whole sequence where John Travolta wants to get leverage over that over the prisoner guy. So they let him go so that they will watch him eat his favorite food.
Rats.
Yeah, so that they can figure out what the fucking guy's favorite food is and feed it to him as a treat.
They talk about his favorite food. I wrote that down too. For like 15 minutes.
Oh,
that
sequence
that Cubel's talking about. And they're just going, see? That's his favorite. He could have chosen anything, but that is it. You're like, what?
And meanwhile, he couldn't have chosen anything. He's an abandoned warehouse. There's no food to be found.
Yeah.
And it's like, he loves raw rat.
This movie, I looked it up online. It cost $73 million to make.
Yes.
And who knows what they spent on advertising.
Well, here's the thing. Apparently, there was a huge lawsuit because the company that made it inflated the budget by $40 million. So that 75 went to some French guy's pocket.
No. Oh, really?
They lost a gigantic lawsuit.
I didn't do any research on this. Did Scientology themselves have anything to do with the making of this movie?
L. Ron Hubbard was supposed to direct this movie in 1985. When the book came out.
Did he direct other movies?
He directed training videos for the Church of Scientology. I'm not kidding.
Just videos.
Yes.
Just training videos and pamphlets.
And John Travolta was supposedly being the young man, the caveman.
Yeah.
But then he aged out of that role and then took the role of Turl. And did you notice that Kelly Preston is in the movie too?
What does she do?
She's the bald, sexy woman with the big tongue who says the best line in the movie. She goes, I'm going to treat you like a baby on a straight diet of Fandango.
What
does that mean? A straight diet of Fandango.
This entire alien race appears to come from a planet where, like, all they're ever taught is maniacal laughter. Like, every single character has crazy broad laughter as a part of their everyday speech.
All the aliens have broad laughter, and all the slaves have like tribal screams, like "No!"
Yeah.
That was my favorite. I love when they devolved into.
But
just
it makes no sense. They're like, "Now we have to get out of here. We have to come up with a plan." Wait a minute. Why do you sometimes grunt and sometimes speak perfect English?
And
here's why. I actually do think that a lot of times they would sort of signal each other, like, "This is when the revolt is going to begin," by barking. And I think that was kind of a fuck you to the cyclones or whatever they were called.
Cyclones.
Like, you think we're man animals? Like, we'll show you.
But the cyclones, and that's what could not, one of the most amazing things is language.
Yes.
Everybody is speaking English, but they're meant to be speaking languages that the other cannot understand.
Right. Exactly.
So inexplicably then, Barry Pepper, right? That's who it is.
Yeah, Barry Pepper.
Barry Pepper has to go in and get like a fucking mind meld, like a Matrix style like download of the cyclo language.
Which is my favorite scene of the entire
movie. Why does that happen?
Okay, he has
Why
to go...
Why does that happen?
Again.
Because they're trying to train him to go out and get the gold.
Okay, well here...
Yeah, they wanted him to go mine gold for them.
Oh my God.
He's already proven to be the most resistant, strongest, like, rebel in the whole crew.
Exactly.
And
like,
Let's give him more power.
Why are you guys so against Scientology? That's what I want to know. I knew that you guys wouldn't even give it a chance, and I want to talk to you guys about this.
For this character, this is my moment of the movie for me. This language machine is what they called it. I actually pulled a clip of it because I had to rewind it when I heard it. This is what the language machine sounds like.
Excuse me, but I am your instructor, if you will forgive such arrogance, for I do not have the honor to be a cyclone. I am but a lowly Klingo language slave. As you are listening to me, I most likely do not exist.
This is the dumbest thing.
That's like a hologram that shows up. It looks kind of like Jar Jar.
Yeah,
he's like he's very low status, and he's like apologizing that they're not as good as the Cyclos. But somehow he's going to teach them language,
and then it just shoots into his brain anyway.
Yeah,
they just shoot
laser beams into his eyes,
and then he learns like. Calculus
and geometry.
And he goes back into his cage and he's telling the other slaves, like, this is a triangle. And they're like, what is it? He's like, it's the strongest thing in the universe.
We thought you were going to help us get out of here. And he's like, this will help us get out of here.
It's the craziest fucking gobbledygook nonsense. And I don't understand why give him this power. Why give? I was so angry at this movie.
I didn't understand this movie. I had to look on Wikipedia to understand what was happening because I was very confused. And so,
who directed this movie?
I know they asked Quentin Tarantino, and he said no.
I wish he had said yes.
And then
this was right after Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Yeah.
And well, it was 2000, so it was a couple of years after. And then, but then they got the assistant director of a Star Wars movie to direct it.
Wow.
Is that why they have those terrible dissolves between scenes? Like the Star Wars
edit. It looks like what you could do in iMovie on the Mac. It was like...
Yeah, it looks like my acting reel.
If you've ever...
between scenes.
If you've ever looked online at like Turkish Star Wars, you know, like, or Hungarian Star Wars, those like ripoff movies, this movie is 10 billion times worse and more complicated to understand.
This reminded me of, you know, at Comic-Con, have you ever seen at Comic-Con where all of the Klingons get together and they have like they put on that sort of that sort of presentation where they're like talking back and forth.
It's like a Klingon play, you know?
Yeah, and it's very over theatrical and overdone, but way better than this movie. Way better than this movie.
I just love there's so many things wrong about this movie too, because they like, why are they even on Earth? They conquered human civilization in 9 minutes. And now they're there to mine? But what are they mining? I guess gold?
There is a shocking lack of, like, at a certain point, like, Barry Pepper and the other rebels are, like, running around doing stuff.
Yeah.
And there are no cyclos anywhere.
Yes.
Like, the whole planet, it has, like, about 15 cyclos.
Well, the
around.
Cyclos only live in that glass facility.
Right.
In Denver.
Where they have special oxygen. But yet, Barry Pepper needs to wear the special oxygen mask, too. I don't understand.
I just love that, like, even in 3000, I guess there are sort of state lines where people know this is Denver, this is Kentucky.
Yeah.
Did you notice
this is Texas?
Did you notice that one sequence where they go to Aspen? There's just a really rusty sign that says welcome or thank you for visiting Aspen. It's where they're on top of that waterfall and they're about to like jump off, and then right before they do that, spaceship flies up and they get out and they like choke the guy and they throw that.
Humans can fly.
Humans can fly. There's a lot of bad green screen in this also.
There is. No.
There's so much. I mean,
seamless.
Oh my gosh. The fact that he went to the library, read a couple books about Fort Knox, the White House, and a secret military base underneath the world.
Fort Hood.
They go to a library, and he reads, like, he's looking at paper, and then he turns it over, and it's the Declaration of Independence.
Which is not giving him clues to anything.
It is useless.
And it doesn't even really pertain to what they're doing here. I mean, does it? I mean, is he...
Guys, there is a sequence in this movie... 1,000 years from now, where cavemen sit in a flight simulator at Fort Hood and learn to fly Harrier jets.
And these are cavemen who only a day before were grunting.
They are wearing pelts for clothes.
then
learn to expertly fly F-18s and then wage war. Exactly.
They are a precision machine.
Absolutely. It is flawless. It is, without a doubt, one of the most insane sequences I've ever seen.
Barry Pepper is told, after he tries his fight machine once, you make another mistake again and I'll smash your puny skull. And he's like, okay. Then the next time he flew it, flawless. Like, oh, that was all it takes? Is some good threatening?
Someone just yelling at you. June, let me ask you this, because you're the only woman in the room.
So far as you know.
Were there any man animals that you were attracted to?
Oh, that's a good question.
Like, do you ever think what it would be like to be in a slave situation like that, where you're with a bunch of man animals?
Well, I do think that... I was curious as to why they did all look like cavemen, because this is not cave time.
But they didn't. They were clean shaven. They were well kept.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And also,
it's just kind of long hair and sort of pelts.
But also, like, if these are modern men and women, I mean, they're way more modern than any of us. They're living in 3000.
Yeah.
Why did all of the women in the movie, like, when Kelly Preston was so excited to have a house.
Yes.
And then when the other cave girl...
Well, Kelly Preston's not a cave person.
No, I know. She's a psycho. But when the other cave girl found her cave boy and he said, you know, we're going to have children or something like that, her face lit up. It's like,
guys,
their motivations are so old-timey.
So crazy. Do you guys realize that there are two movies that we've done in which a person is carrying around a rough drawing of the person they love?
Yes!
Not a picture, because there are no pictures.
Exactly.
But like when the cave woman is captured, she has a rough drawing of Barry Pepper, and that's how they identify that she must know him, just like in stupid fucking Season of the Witch, right?
Also
Season of the Witch, inexplicably, Ron Perlman and one of the guys in this one both say, let's get the hell out of here. As if, like, people in, like, cavemen...
People are cheering,
let's get that... Like,
those are timeless phrases,
yes,
Jason.
They are not timeless phrases. This movie is bullshit.
Do you think Barry Pepper will ever do a movie where he runs around more? I mean, you could not have more scenes where I'm sure the director's like, okay, Barry, so I think you got the gist of it. You're going to go out there, you're going to run the fuck down the block, and then
we're gonna
take
really
a left.
We're going to slow it down.
Yeah, and then run down that block, and then run around that street,
we're gonna just,
and then run back this
we're
way.
We're going to blast debris at you at any corner. He's always getting debris blasted.
Yeah. I love, though, when he was ready for the final battle, that hair went back in a ponytail. I was like, I got to really...
Did anybody else notice...
I got to focus up here.
Did anybody else notice that for about 10 minutes in the movie, while he becomes the revolutionary leader, he has bangs?
Yes,
what?
I did. Yes,
he just for some reason has
different
bangs.
He was doing another movie.
Yeah.
He was definitely off shooting, like, you know,
that baseball movie.
During that final attack, that in the middle of it, John Travolta says, someone calls in and says they're under attack while he's got, and he says, you're going to have to deal with them. I'm too busy for these kind of details.
John Travolta is like, in this movie, John Travolta's character is like Darth Vader if Darth Vader was like a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Like, there is no, like, he's like, God, I can't deal with you, rat brain. Always drinking. They're always drinking,
always
too.
Drinking glow-in-the-dark beverages.
They love glow-in-the-dark beverages.
Straw.
And his signature move is only throat grab.
Throat
all
grab.
He could do is grab somebody around the throat and lift them off the ground.
Also, this is just a small thing, but like very bad, laser bullets that shoot across. Terrible. You know, like when people shoot each other with guns, like the laser beams, like fucking.
They might as well be
spend
making
some fucking
pew, pew
money.
Sounds with their mouth.
Yeah, they really should.
When Forrest Whitaker got his hand cut off, and it was like, he just shot his hand disappeared, and Forrest Whitaker just looks at it for a long time, like.
And at the end of the movie when Travolta's arm gets blown off,
yeah.
I was like, do these people not have nerve endings in their outer limbs?
Yeah, they have no...
They literally just looked at it like, huh.
Oh, well, that's weird. Now, let me ask the
My arm just got blown
leverage,
up by a bomb.
Jason, leverage.
Leverage.
Let me ask the group this. I don't know if you guys normally talk about this on the podcast, but how difficult was it for you guys to masturbate to this?
That's very difficult.
So this is easy. This is
so
easy.
Difficult.
Well, I like green things, and I like...
Yeah, Paul had no trouble at all.
You like long dreadlocks.
I love long dreadlocks. I love Rasta aliens. So this is easy. This is actually a home run for me in many
ways. Rasta aliens.
We've talked about a lot of great moments, but we're going to cut down to our biggest what the fuck moment.
Here we go.
This is our moment that I feel like we need to discuss. Every one of us, we may have a moment that really calls out to us as being just a moment that is crazy. For me, it was the fact that this entire race of cave people did not move more than a mile outside of their cave dwelling because there was a miniature golf course there. They were frightened by the dinosaur in the miniature golf course.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the only thing keeping there. It was a dinosaur also covered in, like, moss. It was not intimidating at all.
Not
that was
scary.
That was the block. Just a giant golf ball and a small dinosaur. And that was what kept all of humanity back at a base.
Well, I don't know if we've talked about the Breathe Right strips.
These were
definitely
the influence for that product.
Yeah, absolutely.
Came from this movie.
Why were they wearing them? Because they couldn't breathe.
They couldn't breathe.
Who fucking knows?
Okay. All right.
Honestly, who fucking knows?
Jason, all right.
This made me so angry. There's a line in the movie where somebody arrives on the planet and goes, I hate these puny undersized planets. The gravity is so... different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that is a perfect line. It makes no sense. And then all the cyclos are supposed to be like these big giant, like 12-foot tall creatures. And they're just wearing stilts and giant boots. And they look, all of the special effects, both digital and practical, are fucking garbage.
Terrible.
Like Cirque du Soleil looks more real when they do shit than this does, you know?
I also love the misrepresentation of what the history of the world was, you know, like where the cyclos are like, oh, dogs were the leaders of this planet, and they were much more amenable than these stupid man
animals. But they weren't good at manual labor.
That was it. Yeah, the dogs could do manual labor.
And then for some reason...
How many dogs live in the nuclear holocaust, by the way?
Right?
That's the other thing.
Then at a certain point, Travolta's like... bonks his head in his office and is like, get a team in here to I want this ceiling different. And then, of course, the team that gets brought in is the exact people we've been following the whole time. So now Barry Pepper, downloaded with the knowledge machine, can hang out in the office of Travolta unsupervised.
And we take all of his information to blackmail Forrest Whitaker.
Why? Why would any of that happen?
Because any plan needs a patsy, as Travolta explains to Forrest Whitaker in like a 10-minute scene.
Oh, God.
He records him with that fucking camera.
By the way, isn't that Scientology? Recording you with a camera so that you can have leverage over somebody?
Leverage. Isn't
that like
leverage,
the knocking?
Again, I want you guys to think about coming on board. I don't know what your aversion to this is. I also wanted to say one of my favorite scenes was when all the slaves were in prison and they have those hoses that shoot the slop into the trough.
Oh, yeah.
And then they all got into the fight because that one guy that was in prison was like, you know, no one eats until I eat. And then they said, no, that's bullshit. We're not doing it. And so then Barry Pepper got in a fight and smashed his head into the slop trough. And then it was like, from now on, we all eat together. And then this little slave girl comes up and takes a little handful of slop and eats the slop.
And the slop is
disgusting.
Coming out of this giant hose. It looks like when you're emptying out like a port-a-john, like just shit is shoved out. I want to talk about this one thing I found out. Apparently there was a toy of Turl that was released, 11-inch toy of Turl, and these are the lines that
That's
he would
say. That's
a
perfect size to go in your butt.
These are the lines that when you pressed his chest, you go, exterminate all man animals at will. You wouldn't last one day at the academy. Man is an endangered species and rat bastard. Oh. That's not a toy that you would want to give a child.
Do they ever show the, because I may have gotten drunk in the middle of this, I don't, and blacked out, but do they ever show this academy that they keep referencing?
No, yeah, never.
There's one, there is a shot where on the planet Cyclo, which just exists to show that the leader has teleported back there.
Yes, yes. Like, right, there was like, no reason for that.
It was useless.
They show, like, I was like, oh, yeah, I thought there something was cut out. Basically, they show this whole teleportation scene. Their leader comes down. Yep. They have a overly wrought scene. And then he goes back, and that was it. He doesn't even say anything, right, when he goes back to the planet. Yeah.
It's just like, oh, I guess they got home safe.
Yeah, that was it.
That's literally, I felt like, why it was done. It was like, he's there now.
So they blew up planet Cyclos at the end?
It seemed to be that there was a genocide at the end.
Okay, because that was a crazy thing. Like, how did they get to planet Cyclos?
They keep talking like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go back and blow up their planet. How?
What?
Come on now, man.
Yeah, they have to teleport to get there. It makes no sense.
But you guys, they've gone through flight simulators. They know how to do that.
And Barry Pepper knows how to dismantle a nuclear bomb?
Yeah.
Did the knowledge machine teach him that?
Well, first of all, it was a language machine. So technically, by all intents and purposes, it only gave him the language, not the knowledge.
No, it was knowledge because it taught him math and all that other stuff.
Oh, you're right.
That's what I think we're meant to believe.
But yet they called it language machine.
Yes, yes.
So even though it taught him knowledge, it was called language machine.
Can you? I don't know how long this movie took to actually make. I'm imagining it probably
5 minutes.
But I mean, you know, it would take months. It takes months to make a movie. And so can you imagine fucking waking up, because you'd have to go there and get there so early to put on this makeup, put in those contact lenses that they're all wearing, get your fake teeth in.
You're standing on stilts every day.
Forrest Whitaker.
For four months, whatever it was. They must fucking hate each other.
Oh, my God.
He must have blown a real head gasket.
You're fired.
I also think when you see movies like this, like, we all know this was Travolta's pet project. And, like, you know he wasn't getting any direction at all. Like, he was just unleashed on the set. Like,
he's like,
do whatever you want to do.
I heard that the craft service on it was so bad that Travolta flew in his own chef and only served the actors from his own
Not to endorse another podcast, but there is an episode of the NPR show, or the public radio show, The Business, in which she just interviews the guy that wrote this movie.
Oh, who sent out an apology this year Razzies nominated him for being for the worst screenplay of the decade. This is Battlefield Earth, worst screenplay of the decade, and this guy came out and said, like, I'm sorry, I apologize. He couldn't write scripts anymore. He had to change his name on scripts to get them sold after this movie because he was just done in Hollywood.
Unfortunately, he changed his name to Terrell, whatever. John Travolta.
Terrell. Oh, man. It is. There's so many. It's also one of those movies that spend a lot of time talking about business and politics. Those boring scenes in, like, all the Star Wars
where it's
the Trade Federation must be very upset about the way
the Home Office won't be pleased.
Oh, that's another thing. Everything, what they came up with for the term is the Home Office. Like, that's retarded.
Got to be in the L. Ron Hubbard stuff, I assume. I've never read any of his books, but
apparently this is the first one, right? It was supposed to be made into two.
This is the whole thing. This movie is based only on 436 pages of a 1,000-page book, and this is supposed to be the first of a trilogy. Yes, and
fingers crossed. Yeah, you
know what? John Travolta recently said that that second one is being worked out.
We can only hope that M. Night Shyamalan directs the rest of the trilogy.
Oh my God,
I would masturbate. I could masturbate.
I would come and kill myself instantly.
I love the other term I liked too was.
It was Last Airbender, not Season of the Witch. I just remembered. In which the person had the drawing of their family.
Right. But it could have worked in Season of the Witch.
Yeah, it could have.
We don't want to be a bunch of arrogant greeners here. Right, guys?
What was that?
The grass is always greener. That was their
piece of cake.
The cavemen refer to each other as arrogant greener.
Why do they keep saying piece of cake? I missed that. I was like, why are they keep saying
piece
of cake?
They're not eating cake. No one's eating cake then.
What is cake? They don't have a concept of cake. It is the year 3000, but yet I guess those jets are all gassed up, ready to fly.
Jets are gassed up, Fort Knox is ready to go, White House burnt out, and golf course is kind of destroyed.
But all the books are cool to read.
Books are pretty great.
Books are pretty good.
Books did not burn, even though they're made out of paper. Books did not burn.
Guns still work. The fuck? It's 3000. I had no idea that it was the year 3000.
So what did you think it was? You thought we were...
I thought it was indeterminate, near catastrophic future.
When you isn't the full title Battlefield Earth? Yeah,
saga of the year.
When you click on it on Netflix, it says Battlefield Earth.
I can't read.
I do want to. I'll play the clip of Travolta saying something in his language, which is English, and then making Barry Pepper translate it. Here we go.
You will soon be relocated to a new mining site. And if any of you get any bright ideas about escaping, just keep in mind that although you know nothing about firearms, I certainly do. I graduated top marksman in my class, and I can kill any one of you at over 1,000 paces. Tell them what I've said. You try to run, he'll kill us.
And then Travolta goes, that's it?
And then Travolta, to prove his point, shoots a cow's leg off.
Yep.
Just a cow in the field. Also, why are there cows? Wasn't there a nuclear holocaust? There are cows just roaming around?
Yeah. Oh my God.
This movie is infuriating. I half believe they were like, well, this is where we're going to shoot. Well, there are those cows over there.
Let's shoot them.
Well, let's keep them in here and maybe we'll CGI the legs getting shot off.
I wonder where this was filmed.
It was shot in Canada, the most expensive production ever in Canada at that time.
Really?
Yes. Now, we always go to the audience to get a little bit of viewer mail.
You've got mail.
And
is that your song? That's your theme song.
For You Got Mail.
For the mail.
Want to hear it again? I'll do it again.
You've got mail.
There it is. Pretty good, right?
who wrote that?
We created that.
That was 15,
sounds very familiar.
It's catching on.
The director of Battlefield Earth actually created that.
He created that.
Basically, this movie got the most Razzie nominations of all time. And so I said to you guys, come up with another category that this can win in. Obviously, this won Worst Actor, Worst Screenplay, Worst Director. Didn't win Worst Supporting Actor. Forest Whitaker escaped that one. But so I asked you guys to come up with your own worst of categories. And let's see. I'll give you an example here.
Some of these are best of also.
They can be best of, I guess. They can be best of. Here we go. Norman writes, worst eyes in any film, Forest Whitaker. Worst eyes. He had these ugly yellow eyes.
Marshall makes a good point. Best clean-shaven caveman.
I said that, yeah.
Barry Pepper.
He also had least explained use of gold as a plot device.
Marshall also had most inebriated cinematographer.
That's right. Oh. All the shots were on these weird...
It's always tilted.
It's always like that Dutch angle, which is just like the very first thing you would ever think to do with a camera. Like, oh, let's just turn it a little bit.
I like this dude, Mike Morrison, writes, best use of the noun, leverage, and then he's counted how many times people say it in the movie. Travolta, 8 times. Barry Pepper, 3 times. Forrest Whitaker, 2 times. Like, and there's got to be more, right?
No, that's high.
Looks like somebody found some leverage. I've taught you well.
Bob Waters said that this is the worst choice of video editing software, and because it was done on Microsoft PowerPoint. It really is. It's just like the fucking dumbest edits.
Dumbest of all time. This one I think was again written by Norman. This is most informative public library goes to the Denver Public Library. They have the nuclear. They have information where the nuclear stockpile is and how to break into Fort Knox.
Robin has best performance by nostrils. Barry Pepper's nostrils. Battlefield Earth.
They are pretty good.
Battlefield Earth. Man, oh man. This was as bad as I heard it was. I saw it in the theater, and I had forgotten how bad it was.
You did?
Yes.
I saw this in the theater?
What are you talking about?
I was invited to a premiere of it in New York City, and I saw it in the theater. And I remember going like, oh,
was that an event? Was that a Scientology event?
Robert, we just had a bunch of great people got together, and we just saw a movie.
But, I mean, were they all Scientologists?
I don't know. Hey, look, I don't know who they are. We just have a great time, and we took some stress tests afterwards.
Sounds like you're covering up for the fact that they were all signed. You mentioned stress tests.
We took a stress test. I was really stressed out, and I went in there not liking the movie, and then after I left, I loved it. I thought it was great.
So you saw this in the theater with a crowded room full of people?
Yes.
How was it received?
Poorly.
Yeah,
like very poorly.
I would hope so.
Yeah. I don't fall asleep in movies, and I do remember falling asleep in the 25-minute-long ending scene, which is like a bad version of the Star Wars trench fight scene. terrible.
Really, really terrible.
Well, go watch us on Netflix Instant. It's 2 hours of your life that you'll never get back, but it's worth it for watching the curtain reveals, which is also, do we talk about the curtains? The curtains actually come in, so at the end of the movie, curtains close.
Oh, I didn't, credits go on.
I didn't get that far.
Curtains close. Like, you're done watching this this stage play.
Good night, little ones.
This small little stage play. Roll credits. Oh, man. Well, that has been How Did This Get Made? Battlefield Earth. Thank you so much for listening. Big thanks to our engineer, Doug. You can follow the majority of us on Twitter. I'm at Paul Scheer, at Rob Hubel, at Miss June Diane. Jason is not on Twitter, but...
Don't do it. I don't do it.
Do you want to plug anything?
Not really.
Okay, great. check us next Monday for the next mini-episode. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
This is Jonathan Van Ness, host of Game of Thrones and currently bringing all the light the world can handle on Netflix's Queer Eye. But do you know I also have a baby podcast and that you can find her right here on Earwolf? On Getting Curious, I sit down for a gorgeous conversation with a brilliant expert to learn all about something that makes me curious, like who is the Beyonce of Renaissance art and how can we be less rude to bees?
Bees are so cute.
They're just making like plants sexy time needs be met.
Right.
Which is great of them. We've talked about cults, we've talked about addiction, the Romanovs, the Middle East, alternative medicine, and dating. And I've spoken with stars like Lizzo, Margaret Cho, and my own mom. A few weeks ago, I got to interview one of my heroes, Olympic figure skater Mariah Nagasu.
Oh my God, Jonathan's crying right now.
Yes, I love an archive. So when you're all done binging season 2 of Queer Eye, head over to Earwolf to expand your baby brain with me on Getting Curious. I want to feel so scared as to why you're going back to the second or third podcast I ever made in my entire life, you weirdo. Why are you sharing that? But share it! I didn't mean to yell at you. I love you so much. And P.S., I've also recorded episodes with Anthony, Karamo, and Tan. Don't worry, Bobby's going to be on real soon. Subscribe to Getting Curious with me, Jonathan Van Ness, now on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.